You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a series of new polls found that a majority of Americans are blaming President Trump and Republicans for the government shutdown. We'll talk about the politics of the shutdown and what it could mean in Washington. First, the organization that governs high school sports in Wisconsin has a message for some parents: cool it. That's a quote. The heads of the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletic Association and its national counterpart wrote an op-ed that appeared in newspapers around the state last week. It said, feel free to cheer and have a good time, but take it easy on the referees and coaches. Here's a line from that piece, quoting now, yelling, screaming, and berating the officials humiliates your child, annoys those sitting around you, embarrasses your child's school, and is the primary reason Wisconsin has an alarming shortage of high school officials. Went on to say that in some areas, athletic events are being postponed or even canceled due to a lack of refs, and that those missed games will be, quote, infinitely greater than just an L on the scoreboard. Barry Mano is the founder and president of the Racine-based National Association of Sports Officials and the publisher of Referee magazine. Barry, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You bet, Rob. Glad to be here.
Well, I think anybody who's been involved in any way in youth sports has seen at least some of this negative parental behavior on the sidelines, to put it mildly. What kind of things are you and your members seeing out there?
Well, that's what we're seeing, and it's the number one reason that folks that come into sports officiating, men and women and young people, 80% of them leave in the first 3 years, and 75% of those officials say it's the adult behavior that causes them to get out of this business. So that leads to a shortage. We don't have enough referees to fulfill the assignments, and it's sort of a sad fact that unsporting-like behavior, especially by adults, is the reason that many of them leave.
Talk about this shortage a little bit. I understand, you know, we've got some older, maybe baby boomers refereeing and ready to be done. We're having trouble filling those gaps if people, as you say, are leaving after 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, in fact, the National Association of Sports Officials just this last year did a historic survey, first time ever, that got 17,500 responses. It was just incredible. And through that survey, we learned a number of things. One thing very instructional, which is back in 1972, the average age of people starting sports officiating was roughly 19 to 20 years old. In 2016, the average age is 42. That tells you that we have migrated. We've become a graying industry in sports officiating, especially in high school sports officiating. And it tells you that we're not bringing in young people into this undertaking.
And we're getting to the point now where, at least in some places, in some cases, games aren't happening because we don't have the refs for them?
Sure. I mean, they just had a case just last weekend in Minnesota, as an example, where a game had to be canceled because there weren't enough referees. Here in Wisconsin, under the WIAA's leadership, some years ago, they started to spread out the scheduling. So, you know, you don't always have all high school football games played on a Friday. Some are played on a Saturday. And the main reason for that is because of the dearth of football officials that are able to cover those assignments.
Talking to Barry Mano with the National Association of Sports Officials based in Racine. He's the publisher of Referee magazine, talking about an op-ed written by people who run high school sports in Wisconsin and around the country, saying parents cool off the bad behavior on the sidelines. Barry, I think people, this isn't just in the United States, people around the world view it as kind of their God-given right to heckle officials at sporting events, pro and otherwise. How do you hope, or do you hope that we can change that attitude on the sidelines, especially at the high school?
I think it's okay within certain boundaries. You can never invade the physical space of sports officials. That's for sure. That has to be a given. And that's one of the things that we've been fighting against. We have assault legislation in 22 different states. NASO has 30,000 members, and every one of those 30,000 members has an assault protection insurance program. Isn't it sad to say that that's a benefit we had to bring online? So we find through our survey, you know, some very important things. 47% of the referees that took part of the survey said that they felt unsafe or feared for their safety due to bad behavior. Can you imagine that? 57% of them said they had to step in and break up a fight or a skirmish during a game. It raises the question, Where are we going here? I mean, the fact that the National Federation of State High School Associations in Indianapolis, in conjunction with the WIAA in Stevens Point, felt a need to issue the plea that they did is very telling, isn't it? I mean, if everything was cool, they would not have to turn out a release to tell parents, how about being cool here?
Has it always been this way, or is it getting worse over time?
It's getting worse. We live in a society with the volume turned up. I always say sports is life with the volume turned up. And we are living in a society that's become loud and brash. We live in a society where we always want a second opinion. We live in a society where we're not really accepting of the word no. And sports officials are in the business of delivering the word no, aren't we? I mean, there it is. That's what the sport requires of us, to go out and say, no, that is not a behavior or an undertaking that can be permitted by the rules of the game. And people are less accepting of that. You know, and an interesting overlay, if I may, has to do with replay. We see replay at the professional level and at the college level. And replay is a wonderful device. It helps us get a few more plays right. It's very much part of the theater package now, the entertainment package of sports. But I think what happens is people who watch a lot of sports see replay. They see decisions being appealed and turned over. But they don't have that down at the high school and youth level. And most likely, they're not ever going to have it. They're certainly not going to have it in that degree because they can't afford to have it. I think it raises expectations. I think it causes them to be less patient and understanding with these men and women who are doing this on a completely part-time basis. They've got other jobs. They've got other lives. They're coming out working these games because they love sports. They want them to be good experiences for the student athletes. And then you have people sitting in the stands with some expectation that we're going to act like we're from the NBA or the NFL.
Men and women and sometimes youth themselves are refereeing these games. And I've read examples of youth being heckled to the points where you've got 12-year-old kids crying, while the referees themselves coming off the fields because parents were yelling at them.
Hey, not only crying, they're quitting. That's the problem. Why would you as a 12 or 14-year-old undertake this, which, by the way, is a wonderful undertaking? It is a great way to make some extra money. It teaches you to be fair-minded and accountable and decisive, three things that we want in most people in our society. And sports officiating does that for you. You send out a 12, 13, 14-year-old kid into this environment, and he or she is not being backed up. What do you think is going to happen? I just don't understand parents who don't get this. Parents care about their kids. They have simpatico with younger people. But they go to these games, and they act like they just landed from a different planet. My point is, stop it. You're not going to get NFL-level officiating or NCAA-level officiating at your kid's eighth-grade game. It is not going to happen.
Are we putting too high a stakes on these games? We don't look at it as just fun. We think there's some kind of consequence down the road. It's just too important now?
Well, that's part of it. You know, the whole argument about living out, you know, through your youngster, that's all part of it. And that's fine if that's where you want to go. It's really the boundary lines of your behavior. That's what has to be managed. I mean, you know, you yell at a referee, you missed a call. That's no big deal. Come on. We can handle all that. Believe me, we can handle that. But this idea of trying to intersect us after we're leaving the field, the pitch, or the floor after a game on our ways to our car or our dressing rooms, and you want to make a point to us, that's unacceptable behavior. That's when referees feel unsafe, and that's why almost 50% of them on our survey said they have experienced those times of feeling unsafe. Well, that's a terrible commentary on the culture of sports.
We're talking about the shortage of referees in high school and youth sports with Barry Mano. He's founder and president of the Racine-based National Association of Sports Officials, the publisher of Referee Magazine. He says, according to surveys, a big driver for that shortage is bad behavior by parents in the stands, driving people off the field, out of refereeing. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to a Wisconsin's high school sports organization telling parents to cool it on the sidelines? Have you seen parents screaming at and berating officials? If you've been a referee yourself, what kind of stories do you have? What have you seen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about bad behavior by parents at high school and youth sporting events and a referee shortage officials say is happening as a result. Barry Mano is our guest, founder and president of the Racine-based National Association of Sports Officials. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you seen bad behavior in the stands and sidelines? If you've been a referee yourself, what have you seen on the field, the court, or the pitch? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls now. Cindy is with us in Appleton. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Well, I agree with your guest that this is a sad commentary. And, you know, parents are supposed to set examples. They're supposed to be the good examples. And even with this, you know, being talked about and brought into the light, I unfortunately don't think it's going to change much of anybody their behaviors, which is really sad.
Cindy, thanks a lot for the call. And Barry, I think among the people who hate this the most, hearing parents yell from the sidelines, has got to be the kids. I know my kids don't want to hear me offer even encouraging advice, much less yelling at people when I'm on the sidelines.
Well, that's for sure. And in some places, you know, they have silent Saturdays, they're called, where the games go on and no parents and no fans can be in the gymnasium or at the field. That's a sad commentary. You can't even watch the kids play. And the kids want it that way because they enjoy it more without the parents being there.
And what does that say to you about, as Cindy was talking about, role modeling from the grown-ups on the sideline?
Well, you know, obviously it's gotten away from them. I think it can be recaptured. I know Cindy called, and her outlook is somewhat bleak, and maybe it goes there, but I'm hoping it doesn't go there. I hope we come to our senses and understand that, by and large, sports is an extension of the classroom. That's why we want them. And get back to that. We want the kids to learn skills and to understand sometimes in life you're going to get an incorrect call, and there it is, and you have to pick up the pieces and move on. One thing I say is this discussion cannot turn on the rightness or the wrongness of a call that a referee makes. We can't allow ourselves to go there. You can go there at the professional level, because of all the technology, and finally get to what they think is the accurate call. At the other levels, we're going to have to accept judgment, and we're going to have to accept the goodwill and the dedication of the men and women who do this. And yes, at times it's going to be incorrect, and yes, at times you're not going to like it, but that's the teachable moment. That's when you need to have some discipline. Yes, you can have some emotion, and yes, you can say something, but you got to get it in check. You got to cool it, as they say, and make sure your kid understands that on the ride home. And you get to say, listen, Betty, I think you got a bad call on that particular play, but there it is. The game's got to go forward. Isn't that a teachable moment that we should be having for our young people?
Cindy, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Jason in Madison. Jason, hi.
Hey, how you guys doing? Thanks for taking my call. You know, I absolutely love this conversation. I was a athletic director at a high school near Madison for 4 years. And I can definitely attest to this, that the shortage was so incredible that I was reaching out to officials through the WIA website. You know, I would get their contact information. I would have to pay someone mileage just to travel, you know, from Plover, Wisconsin, or something for a varsity non-conference baseball game. And so I'd have to pay on the mileage, and so then the fees went up because there weren't enough people or who could take the game or even wanted to take the game. So, you know, this conversation is just fantastic, and I can tell you that this is something that's very serious. And if parents and spectators don't get a grasp on this, pretty soon they're going to find that their games are going to go from maybe a 22-game season to like a 16-game season. And who's going to get blamed for that? The athletic director, the administration in the school? When it comes down to, these officials are getting hit really hard during these games. And it's a very sad thing to see. And to be honest with you, I don't blame them for quitting sometimes, because what is a basketball, you know, a JV basketball might make $40 a game, but you're away from your family for 6 hours. So I really appreciate this conversation, you guys. Thank you.
Jason, thanks a lot for calling in and sharing your experience at athletic director, former athletic director there. Barry definitely felt the pinch of a referee shortage.
Yeah, that's quite an anecdote that he shared with us. Another thing I want to share with the listeners is they should understand that sports officials are in the enforcement division, as I say. We're not in the legislative division. We don't make the rules up. The rules committees make the rules. They turn to us in the enforcement division and say, this is how we want you to enforce the rules. So fans and spectators should understand that the rules are there. They've been agreed upon by all the powers that be. They've been agreed upon by those who own sports, if you will, which would be the high schools and the school districts, and they bring us in to enforce the rules to the best of our ability. So we can't make stuff up as we go along, and we're trying to do our best with often a very complicated set of rules to adjudicate a game fairly, to ensure that it's played by the rules while emphasizing fairness and safety. That's our goal.
Thanks for that call, Jason. We're talking to Barry Mano from the National Association of Sports Officials. He's based in Racine. We're talking about angry parents on the sidelines at high school and youth sports and why it's driving referees out of the business, creating a referee shortage in many cases. Back to your calls now. Sue is with us in Fish Creek. Sue, hi.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Our children went to school in the American schools abroad since we weren't living in the States. And if your child played a sport, both parents had to sign an agreement to a code of conduct. And if you didn't abide by the code of conduct, you were escorted away from the game. And I only saw it happen one or two times. And no one wanted to be taken. It was a shameful thing, to be taken out of the game. And it really turned everything around. And it's a shame it has to get to that point, but it worked.
Sue, thanks for the call. A shame, but it works. Barry, is this something we've seen in high schools here in Wisconsin?
Not so much in high schools, but we've seen it at the youth level where you have these contracts that parents have to sign dealing with their behavior. You know, just me saying that sort of makes me sick. But there it is, that we have to go to a point where you have to sign a document that you're going to behave the way you're supposed to behave. Otherwise, your kid's not going to get to play. That's the only, and people will say it's unfair to the kid. Well, I'm sorry, but we have to have some lever, some line in the sand. So it's been used at the youth level. I'm not sure I'm familiar that it's been used at all in high schools in Wisconsin. I don't know that.
We'll go back to our callers. We have many of them. Kurt is with us in Appleton. Kurt, hello.
Hello, how are you guys?
Good. What's your story, Kurt?
Oh, I was a referee. I've been an athletic director, currently a principal, been around a lot of these games, and I understand what he's saying. My particular story is my sport was wrestling, and after coaching it for many years, I went into administration. I didn't coach anymore, so I decided to get into reffing, and when you first start, they tend to put you in these youth-type tournaments, and I'm telling you, that's the worst place to start. Because that's where, in my opinion, the parents feel most emboldened. I'm not going to say I was felt like physically things were going to happen to me, but they would invade your personal space every single meet, every time their kid lost. And it got to a point where, you know, I was trying to give back. I quit doing that. It just wasn't worth my time away from my own kids growing up. And as athletic director, having a meet manager that is willing to step in and listen to the ref, when the ref points at someone in the crowd, get them out of here, do so. Do it quickly, and things get better in a hurry.
Kurt, thanks a lot for the call. Again, Barry, it's terrible that it gets to that point, but does that kind of enforcement from whoever's managing the meet really make a difference? Does it send a message to everybody else?
It's total. We have to have game management squarely in this. Remember, the referees are in the enforcement division. We come in, we do the game, and we leave, and that's what we want to do. We're not there as game managers controlling the crowd. We can't go up in the crowd and do stuff. So having very strong game management that's on the same wavelength. We like to meet with game management before a meet or a game so we know what they look like, and we're on the same page about what it is we're trying to do this afternoon or tonight. Absolutely critical dimension in this.
Thanks a lot for that call. Sorry about your experiences there. Mike joins us now in Rice Lake. Mike, hello.
Hi, I was going to suggest a penalty that could be against the crowd. Just call a three-minute delay in the game. It doesn't go against either team, so that you can avoid somebody maybe seeding a crowd with unsavories or something like that. But it would just cause everybody to just chill for a few minutes. And if it accumulated, you know, five, six delays in a game, that would get significant, and it would kind of crowdsource the behavior modification.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Interesting idea. Sad, again, Barry, that we're having to consider the idea of timeouts for the grown-ups.
Well, I would say this. If that's what the people who own the product line, known as youth or high school sports, wants to do, we'll be happy to enforce that for them.
Thanks a lot for that call. Mike, let's finish up on this, Barry. Is this just a few bad apples? Do you think that a lot of the grown-ups involved are out there thinking, yes, please, do something like this. Let's change this for the better.
Just the fact that the Federation and the WIAA jointly came out with this, as it's picked up in a number of other states, this problem is serious, and it's being recognized as serious. I'm hopeful that this gets solved, that we turn the temperature down, and we start to applaud sports officials, even when we disagree with them, because without them, the rules are just ink on paper. Without us doing what we do, we don't have organized sports as we know them, and that's the decision we have to make.
We'll leave it there. Barry, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You bet. Glad we could do it.
Barry Mano is the founder and president of the Racine-based National Association of Sports Officials and the publisher of Referee Magazine. We talked to them about the shortage of referees in high school sports due in large part, according to surveys they've done, to anger, harassment from parents on the sidelines. Well, a lot of you had stories to share, couldn't get to all of you. You can keep sharing your thoughts and your experiences over at the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up, polls show that many Americans blame President Trump and Republicans for the ongoing government shutdown. We'll talk about the politics of the partial shutdown and what, if anything, is going to happen next. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 6 on The Morning Show, Kate Archer-Kent's guest says the U.S. legal and political system keeps Native Americans from participating in key decisions that affect their lives. Meet the author of American Apartheid, The Native American Struggle for Self-Determination and Inclusion. That's tomorrow morning at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now, the federal government entered its 25th day of a partial shutdown, making it the longest period that hundreds of thousands of federal workers have been furloughed. A quick recap, for more than 3 weeks now, lawmakers have been in an impasse over the budget, over President Trump's call for more than $5 billion to fund construction of a new wall at the U.S.-Mexico border. Recent polling has shown that most Americans are now blaming President Trump for the ongoing shutdown and that Republicans are more to blame than Democrats for its continuation. Karen Hoffman is Adjunct Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University and Associate Director of the Les Aspin Center. Karen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Karen, as you see it, what's been the impact of the shutdown so far?
Well, multiple impacts. I think, you know, you cited some of the poll data that suggests that there's a lot of blame going in the, you know, Trump's and the Republicans' direction. I think, though, that overall this isn't good for Congress as an institution either. And their approval ratings have been so far down all along. But I think that just this makes people distrust and just really not think that Congress can get things done, period, even, you know, with Democrats. So I think it hits both of them and the Congress.
And looking at the impacts, we're seeing things like now members of the U.S. Coast Guard not getting paid, concerns about people not showing up at air traffic or at TSA security checkpoints to work, longer lines there. Are we going to start to see stories like this that say, okay, this isn't just a distant impact that doesn't affect us?
Yes, absolutely. And I think some of that is already happening. So one of the things that has happened in our politics, and this has been going on for some time, but is that we tend to do the negotiating or, you know, trying to find the compromise in public with sound bites through the media. And that's a really hard way to find common ground. And I think what I've kind of been reading, though, is there are some folks in Congress who are very quietly starting to talk together, and they're not reporting what they're saying. And when that kind of thing happens, that leads me to believe that something might actually be moving forward. But when it's just played out with, you know, each side throwing out a soundbite to try to make the other side look bad, that nothing can come of that. But I think the pressure that it is coming home to roost is prompting members of Congress on both sides to really see if they can try to find some common ground. But they're going to do it quietly.
Well, here's a roadblock to that, maybe, digging into this polling. Okay, a majority of people blame President Trump and Republicans for the shutdown. A really big majority of Democrats blame him. Switch over to Republicans, a majority of them blame Democrats. So who are they serving, I guess, the American public in general, and we want to compromise, or we don't want to betray our base that is backing us anyway?
That is a problem. However, and actually, frankly, I think that some members, Republican members of Congress, are probably not, I think they're probably a little frustrated at the corner that sort of Trump painted himself into, because a lot of times, you know, they disagree all the time and they work things out and compromise. But if you start out from a point where there's really no room, it makes their lives difficult. So you're right. I mean, it's so polarized on both sides. But as you pointed out, this is starting to affect people all over, from every walk of life, you know, whatever their partisanship, and there's going to be some, they're going to be anxious to try to get something done. Now, the key is they're both going to have to say they got something. And I'm not sure what that looks like, but the Republicans are going to have to say they got something out of this, and so will the Democrats.
Talking to Karen Hoffman from Marquette University about the ongoing government shutdown and the prospects, if any, to end it. And let's follow up on that point, Karen. There's all the talk of the wall, a structure, concrete, steel, whatever. A lot of people at various points have said, I would support a package that includes some kind of physical barrier as part of security, more personnel, more searches of cars to try to get heroin coming through checkpoints. Like, there could be a border security package in theory, right, that both sides would agree on, couldn't there?
Yes. But I think what the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said is he's not willing to bring anything up in the Senate for a vote unless Trump has said he would vote for it. So I do believe that exactly what you say is possible in the Senate and in the House. I guess, you know, the question is, are they going to vote on something that they both agree on, or is it going to be sort of a stalemate until Trump says, yes, I will vote for that? However, as the pain grows deeper, as you say, there's going to be more pressure in Congress, and it's already being felt. Again, there have been really some quiet bipartisan conversations going on about trying to, I think, do exactly what you say, is how can we come up with something? And, of course, the president has to get something out of this. And I hope that, I don't know, he's in a tough spot because he's pretty much given an ultimatum, and it's hard to negotiate with that. But I do believe that even Republican members of Congress understand that this isn't good. So I think there are a lot of conversations going on, but it remains to be seen. But I think that that what you suggest is this overall border package is certainly something that quite a few of them could get on board on.
Related to what you were just saying, I saw a tweet from former Wisconsin Congressman Reed Ribble. I think this was earlier today, Republican. He was responding to a tweet about the shutdown and the lack of pay for Coast Guard personnel. But he said, this is astoundingly stupid and disrespectful. The government's inability to function is an international embarrassment. Reed Ribble goes on, the solution is for both chambers to allow votes on each other's remedy. If POTUS, the president of the United States, vetoes, go back to the drawing board and keep trying until it's right. So he says, this is one case he says, don't do what Mitch McConnell is doing. Don't wait for the president to agree to something, pass stuff and put it in the president's court. Is that something you could see happening, especially in the Senate?
I think as the pressure grows, you know, I think it will. You know, as more and more people really just, I think most people do think this is just stupid and not the way to go about business. But, I mean, this is sort of a sign of the times, right? I heard another expert saying it's like the first, you know, when these shutdowns had started happening years ago, it was considered to be this awful, horrible thing, and they immediately, you know, went to work to stop it. And it seems like the every time we do this, there's we let it go on longer. And I don't know where the point is, but we will reach a point, I think, where that will happen. And yes, I do think now I think there will be conversation between the Senate leadership and the president before they bring it up to vote. But at some point, yes, they will, because, yeah, this is hurting lots of people. And really, frankly, no one wants this to continue. But the way it's being negotiated makes it really difficult to come to an agreement where both sides can say that they've gained something. They're sort of both at absolute position still, which is not, a government just never has worked like that. So it's going to have to change a little bit. But I do think that it's possible. Yes.
One twist on some past shutdowns is that some funding bills had already been passed and already been signed before we hit this point, so that we keep having to throw in the word partial federal government shutdown. Does that, the fact that at least some key, you know, most members of the military, except the Coast Guard, who are under Homeland Security, are getting paid, like a lot of things that, you know, people would not allow happen for too long, they're already paid for. Is that affecting the debate?
I believe so. Yes, absolutely. If this was affecting our military more directly, and as you say, the Coast Guard, well, and just look at the reaction that is getting. Clearly, people think that's very important, too. That is absolutely part of this. And I know I've heard, I think that this is not going to be heard anymore, but for a little while, I've heard people saying, well, you know, most of the federal workers are Democrats anyway. Of course, providing no evidence of that. But there is a sense that, well, this isn't such a bad thing anyway, you know, we're, you know, the military's fine. You're right. That, but as time goes on, it becomes evident that there's a lot more, you know, it is hurting lots more people. And it's not just people of, you know, one type. So, but yeah, the partial thing, absolutely. They managed to pass some appropriations bills this time around. And so only part of the government is unfunded. And absolutely, I think that that was used. But, you know, increasingly, the stories we're hearing about how painful this is, I think we'll get through.
We're talking to Karen Hoffman right now. She's an adjunct associate professor of political science at Marquette University and director, associate director of the Les Aspin Center, with us to talk about recent polls that have found that most Americans blame Republicans and President Trump for the ongoing shutdown. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you blame one side or the other for the shutdown, or do you blame the system as a whole? Should the president hold out for funding specifically for the border wall? If you have a compromise of some sort in mind, what would it look like for you? Call 800-642-1234. And if you are directly affected, if you or someone in your family, say, works for the Coast Guard or other federal agency that is seeing $0 paychecks, please do call in. 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about recent polls that blame President Trump and Republicans for the ongoing partial government shutdown, now the longest in U.S. history. Karen Hoffman is with us, adjunct associate professor of political science at Marquette University. And you at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on the ongoing shutdown? Is it affecting you yet? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. To your calls now, Tom is with us in Cuba City. Tom, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
I believe that this is on Donald Trump, that he knows that a border wall isn't going to affect anything. It's not quite possible, that he's fear-mongering and playing political points with his base that is largely afraid, afraid of immigration and, frankly, I believe a racist base. If he truly wanted this wall, how come it hasn't happened in the first 2 years when both houses of Congress were Republican?
Tom, thanks for the call. Karen, this is a point Democrats certainly raising. Why not? Mm-hmm. Why didn't he get it done over the last 2 years?
Oh, that's a very good point. Yes, he could have. But I think that one of the things that will become, I mean, I think it's already known to be true, but become more clear, is that there are a number of Republicans who believe in border security, but also don't believe that, you know, this barrier, physical barrier all the way is the way to do it. So I think that there wasn't a whole lot of appetite for that even before, although border security is very important. But, and you're right, he is, you know, this was a big campaign promise, right? Now, I think, though, that by giving an ultimatum, though, that generally isn't a good way to start sort of negotiations, right? I mean, it's an ultimatum. So I feel like, you know, the progress has really been sort of halted, because if he's just going to dig in, then the way our government usually works is there's give and take. And so I think some of that just has to start happening before we get anywhere.
Thanks for the call, Tom. We'll go now to Cole in Sun Prairie. Cole, hello.
Hi. Wanted to just share my thoughts on the wall. And, you know, personally, the story and the shutdown affects me because my father-in-law is an FDA food inspector. So he missed his first paycheck last week. And it's troublesome because people like him, and in particular, his situation is that he's fighting brain cancer and has very expensive treatments that he has to pay for. And, you know, without these paychecks, if that goes on long enough, it's going to make it very difficult to pay for health insurance and mortgage and everything else. And it's upsetting because of the fact that this whole wall is, this debate is based on a false premise of a national security emergency. So why were even toying with the idea of compromising over something that doesn't even legitimately exist is absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And if anything, Wisconsin constituents should be calling Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson, and day in, day out, and telling him that he needs to force McConnell to bring a vote to the floor. And if that's not the case, then he needs to work with Republican colleagues in the Senate to put somebody else as a majority leader who will bring these to a vote.
Cole, thanks for the call. Best to your father-in-law as he goes through the treatment for brain cancer. The prospects, Karen, I want to start with his last point there, the idea that Republican senators might revolt in effect against Mitch McConnell. How likely do you see that?
I think that what they'll do first is try to convince him, you know, to that, you know, this is bad for them, this is bad for the country, this is bad for all kinds of people, and so, you know, he should move on this. So, it would have to get really bad for them to revolt against him, but certainly I think there are a lot of Republicans in Congress who would love to vote on something. And so, yes, I think that, you know, how that all transpires, but it's just really sad at how, you know, I mean, even missing one paycheck can be a huge blow, even without an illness, which is even worse then. And I think that those stories are going to be starting to come out loud and clear, and I think that's going to put a lot of pressure on them in the Senate.
Cole, thanks for the call. And another point Cole raised, not just the impact on his father-in-law, but the job his father-in-law does,
right?
FDA food inspecting, is that something that people are worried about if food inspectors aren't on the job in the numbers they usually are?
Well, you'd think that they would be. In fact, and I know that there are so many other jobs and tasks that aren't in, you know, the in the headlines the way the Coast Guard is, that it's really just kind of devastating. I know that like some of the Head Start child care facilities are going to start running out of money. And, you know, what even the people who have jobs, what are they going to do when they have nowhere, you know, will they be able to go to work anyway? So this is really rippling through a lot of places. So I think the pressure will grow. And, I think something will happen. It's just, you know, this is a trend of our times, though. It used to be that they would go behind closed doors and say things, and there were no ultimatums because you could always, you know, you weren't held to what you were saying, and they would kind of work things out. And when we try to work things out in the public sphere, it's a lot harder.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Karen Hoffman from Marquette University, looking at the partial government shutdown, public opinion, and the prospects for compromise. Back to your calls now. John is with us in New Glarus. John, hi.
Hello. Well, thanks for taking my call. Thankfully, at least in this particular time, I haven't personally felt the effect of the government shutdown. But my point ultimately in discussing kind of our Congress and how they act is our school system requires a certain grade in order to pass. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, that's at least above 70%. But our Constitution requires two-thirds of a majority in order to pass a bill that would be veto-proof, obviously, both in the House and the Senate. It seems to me, based on that in context, that it's pretty terrible, not a great expectation, ultimately, to only ask our Congress to essentially pass legislation that, in other contexts, would be considered to be failing.
That's an interesting point, yeah.
John, thanks for the call. And actually, that reminds me, people, you mentioned the low opinion of Congress, mm-hmm. and it's out there, and it's true, and a very high, even after a big flip in congressional seats, pretty strong performances by incumbents. People hate the Congress, love their congressperson.
Yep. Well, and that's part of the problem with this negotiation on this kind of issue, because, you know, there are some members who might themselves want to move on something, you know, some kind of compromise. But if their constituents are lighting up the phones and emails saying, no, we want you to stay where you are, it's a dilemma. And, you know, as I think, Rob, as you pointed out, if you look at the data on both sides, there are strong feelings on the Democratic side against this, but strong feelings on the Republican side for it. And there's a reason that the Founding Fathers set up this system with checks and balances, and sometimes it doesn't sound like such a good idea, you know, when we can't get anything done. But the idea really was, and to talk about the failing grade for anything, you know, less than 70, is they really thought, though, that if you could get a president, a Senate, and a House to agree to something, not that it would be great, but it couldn't be that terrible. Now, that may be a very low bar, as the caller points out. But I think to some extent they thought, well, we aren't going to it will be not that bad. Now, unfortunately, we seem to, again, sometimes this is the constituents' fault, and then we blame it on Congress. But if their voters are insisting that they stay the way they are, I mean, I think sometimes it's also the voters' fault for, you know, not looking at the big picture either. But Congress will take the brunt of it, as always.
Briefly, as you wrap up, Karen, do you think both sides or either side are looking at this and also looking over their shoulder at election 2020 and figuring out how this all plays into it?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things, I know it's even hard for us to believe in our lifetimes, but once campaigns were over and elections happened, there really was a distinction between the whole governing process. Not that people didn't act political, but we are in the era of a permanent campaign, so absolutely everyone is thinking about that. And, of course, that can also be a problem.
Karen, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
Oh, thank you for having me. Bye.
Karen Hoffman is Adjunct Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette University and Associate Director of the Les Aspin Center. Joined us for a look at the ongoing partial federal government shutdown. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, we'll get the latest on the Senate confirmation hearings for the Attorney General nominee, William Barr, amid concerns over how he would manage the ongoing Mueller probe. Every generation raises kids a little differently. A lot of parenting fads have come and gone over the years. The author of a new book shares some of the big trends in child raising, from ancient Rome to helicopter parenting. That and more, it's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show. Tomorrow at 7, Shopko has closed stores in Wisconsin and around the country, and a bankruptcy filing may be around the corner. Kate Archer-Kent's guest gives us the latest details on the uncertain road ahead for the Wisconsin-based retailer. That's tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then our guest will share his hobby of photographing vintage beer signs of Wisconsin and the Midwest. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here on the Ideas Network.